Welcome to the Florida Roundup. It's the statewide edition this hour. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, the students of Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School had the floor and the nation's attention Wednesday night at a town hall meeting on CNN. A crowd of 7,000 people watched in that hall, along with viewers around the nation, as students and their parents pelted Washington lawmakers with questions about gun control reform. One of them was Fred Gutenberg. His daughter, Jamie, was one of the students murdered by the school shooter last week in Parkland. Gutenberg confronted Senator Marco Rubio on his opposition to an assault weapons ban.
Now, I think what you're asking about is the assault weapons ban.
Yes, sir.
So let me be honest with you about that one. If I believed that that law would have prevented this from happening, I would support it. But I want to explain to you why it would not.
Senator Rubio, my daughter, running down the hallway at Marjory Stoneman Douglas, was shot in the back.
Yes, sir.
With an assault weapon. The weapon of choice.
Yes, sir.
Okay? It is too easy to get. It is a weapon of war. The fact that you can't stand with everybody in this building and say that, I'm sorry.
Students, meantime, afterward, Alex Wind survived the Douglas school shooting, also one of the founders of the Never Again movement. He was not satisfied with what he heard at that town hall Wednesday night.
I hoped to get a lot of responses to how these people were going to be taking action rather than the talk. And I think that there was still a lot of talk, so I will believe it when I see the action being made.
Taylor Bird is a sophomore at Piper High School in Sunrise, Florida, and thinks that the student movement will lead to change here.
We're Generation Z, and we use technology, and we're everywhere, and we can't be ignored anymore, and the revolution's already begun. We're going to change the world, whether people like it or not. People tell us we're too young because they're scared of what we can do.
The students call their movement Never Again, and it has been a week of anguish, but also activism for the kids from Stoneman Douglas. They have stepped directly into the debate over gun reform in ways that no school shooting survivors ever have in the past. Senior Emma Gonzalez is one of the student leaders.
The people who aren't speaking out, those are the people who are feeling this the most, that they're feeling it so much that they can't even speak about it. And those are the people that we're doing this for. And we will have our time to grieve.
The students have been vocal, they've been eloquent, and they have forced politicians at the local, state, and national level to respond. Later in the hour, we're going to talk about Governor Rick Scott's proposals on gun reform in Florida. He just came out with some ideas a couple of hours ago, as a matter of fact. Meanwhile, President Trump on Thursday endorsed the idea of arming classroom teachers. That was the same idea floated by both House Speaker Richard Corcoran here in Florida and Florida Senate President Joe Negron.
I am open to the idea of having, again, properly credentialed, properly trained teachers, retired military, retired law enforcement members that have the appropriate training and background tests done.
Lawmakers are talking about other ideas like raising the minimum age to 21 and creating a waiting period for the purchase of guns like the AR-15, the semi-automatic weapon used in the Douglas massacre. Those restrictions are already in place for the purchase of handguns. And the governor and others in the legislature want to discuss measures to keep guns away for those who've shown they may be a danger to themselves or others. They're also talking about things like boosting funding for mental health services and figuring out how to increase cooperation, Tom, between law enforcement, school leadership, and mental health providers.
Yeah, all these proposals coming out in the last couple of hours here on this Friday, and they come, Melissa, after dozens of Douglas students went to Tallahassee in the middle of the week making their case for gun reform going right to the state capitol. Senior Susanna Barna says the students, they're not looking to ban all guns.
We're calling for safety measures, mental health reform, gun safety reform, but we are not calling to get rid of guns. That's just not the message we're trying to put out there. We're trying to say that this is a nonpartisan issue and that this needs to be something that all humans can agree on.
Well, certainly students agreeing on a walkout, thousands across the state of Florida walking out of class on Thursday in solidarity with the Stoneman Douglas students. Madison Ramirez organized the walkout at Tampa Catholic.
even though it's not affecting us, we're supposed to be advocating for the people it is affecting. That's our whole faith. And if we are not living it out through action, then what's the point?
Meanwhile, disturbingly, threats of violence at schools have been widespread since the shooting at Douglas High School last week. Schools have been put on lockdown around the country as these threats pop up on social media. Our public radio partner WGCU in Fort Myers has created a detailed map showing the threats against Florida schools since the Parkland shooting. You can check it out right now at WGCU.org. And give us a call here on the Florida Roundup from wherever you are in Florida at 305-995-1800 as we discuss the Never Again movement and the renewed push for gun reform in Florida and the nation. Right now, to talk about this, we welcome Alan Gomez of USA Today. And Alan, as you've been writing in USA Today, these students from Parkland have a series of factors in their favor that no group of school shooting survivors has had before. What are those factors?
Yeah, this is one of the things that I've been really fascinated with by this particular movement. Unfortunately, I, like, you know, everyone here, has covered too many of these school shootings, but never have we seen a response this dramatic and that has led to the kind of changes that we're already talking about. And part of the reason, there are several reasons for this. You know, one of them is geography. In Las Vegas, there were 57 victims, but because they were spread out throughout the continent, some of the victims were from Canada, from Alaska to California to West Virginia, so it was hard for them to sort of coalesce into one group. You know, the state of technology played a big factor. In Columbine, it was sort of a mystery what happened there. I remember it was weeks before we even saw the first images from what happened in there. Yet in this case, these students were able to tweet in real time, live stream what was happening inside the classrooms, and so that allowed Americans into the classroom to see and to hear and to feel what they were going through. And then their age is a huge factor. Sandy Hook is something that really affected a lot of Americans, but because those were 6 and 7 year olds, they were rightfully protected from any sort of TV cameras or any kind of interviews. So Americans weren't able to see what they went through, to kind of experience what they felt, where in this case, obviously, the Parkland students were young enough that they're still kids, but old enough where they can go before cameras and really lay out what they were feeling and what they wanted to see done.
It is really fascinating to watch how these students have emerged and how eloquent they've been. At the same time, there have been a few shots taken at them, calling them crisis actors, conspiracy theory that's been debunked. What are your thoughts about the way the Never Again movement now is being led by teenagers? As you wrote in USA Today, when you're 18 years old, you're still idealistic enough to believe that you can go out and change the world.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what happens when with a lot of these shootings, that, you know, it kind of turns to adults and it turns to heads of advocacy organizations in Washington, politicians who, you know, we all kind of become cynical after a while. We understand the influence of money on politics, and we just assume there's a certain limit to what we can accomplish. These kids don't have that. They are, you know, they don't see those limitations, and so they are demanding the kind of action that we're seeing right now. I mean, short of that, you don't have that many people in Tallahassee demanding change from Governor Scott and from the legislature there. You don't see the kind of protests that we've seen around the country. I'm thinking about what's going to happen on March 24th when there's this national march that they're organizing. I mean, those numbers could be absolutely historic, because these kids have resonated and touched into a generation that is just sick and tired of this sort of stuff. And it's just going to be overwhelming.
Alan, like a lot of journalists, you've covered a number of demonstrations and movements over the course of your career. Most recently, the Women's March that we saw on the Mall in Washington and a lot of other communities around Florida and the United States, immigration marches as well. What are the lessons for the Never Again movement to pull from those? And are you seeing things that rhyme or things that they're doing differently, in part because of a reaction or lack thereof that we've seen in movements past?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two sides of this. On the one hand, you know, I spent a lot of time after the election last year with these indivisible groups and with the Women's March movement, and going to a lot of their meetings, and that enthusiasm, that spirit was there. But it's different because they were trying to fight a fight on so many different fronts. So you'd go into one of these meetings and there'd be, you know, 12 clipboards to sign up for the immigration group and the gun group and the violence group and the racism group. And it's sort of kind of, it kind of tended to break them up a little bit. These kids have the advantage that they have a singular issue that they're trying to focus on. So that allows them to remain focused. The other thing that they could learn from, I think, is these groups, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to try to really latch onto them.
Right.
And you saw that immediately. I mean, not to say that it was nefarious, but you already saw, you know, several politicians kind of speaking with them, speaking alongside them, trying to say that your cause is my cause. And immediately I'm hearing a lot of what they're saying. We're fighting for this. We're fighting for that. And in the back of my head, I'm like, I don't think these kids care about that.
Yeah, they've got one issue. And how about the fact that these are sassy Generation Z, I guess you call them kids, who understand how to create a meme and drive a narrative meme on Twitter and Instagram and other platforms. I think that has worked in their favor as well. And let's go to some calls now. Here on the Florida Roundup, 305-995-1800. Jeff is in Miami. Hey, Jeff. You're on the Florida Roundup.
Okay, good afternoon. One area that the Parkland teens, as well as all the teens in Florida, can direct their activism towards is voting. Change the laws, you got to change the politicians. In Florida, teens as young as 16 can register to vote. And that should be an area of emphasis. Register at 16, vote at 18, change the political environment.
Thanks for that, Jeff. You know, Alan Gomez, I have seen the kids affiliated with Never Again, particularly some of the more vocal students and more well-known students that have emerged from Douglas High School, like David Hogg and others, making those kinds of comments online in recent days. We're going to be voting soon. But of course, young people are not reliable turnout voters. And so, you know, I think it remains to be seen how this is going to play out at the voting booth. But as someone who's written extensively about this, what about Jeff's comments?
Yeah, I mean, that's always sort of the breakdown when we see these kind of things, is the follow through, is maintaining the momentum. You know, my day job is covering immigration, and I can't tell you how many times over the last, you know, couple of decades I've seen sort of big organized marches, big pushes. You know, lately we're, you know, the big thing is trying to get protections for Dreamers and things like that. And they always try to tack on and the only way to get this really done forever is to register to vote and to make, you know, the Hispanic vote larger. But then November comes around and their numbers are just about the same. And you don't see that sort of follow through. And so that's the danger right here, is that this moment that they're rallying, that the attention is on them, that everything's going on. But if that doesn't carry through into registrations, then not to say that this would be for naught, because there's obviously going to be some changes at the federal and state levels as a result of this. But to maintain that momentum, the only way to do that is to register in huge numbers.
And I think one of the other fundamental facts here in terms of how the Never Again movement has kind of caught fire so quickly, not just in South Florida, not just in Florida, but not just in places where there have been mass shootings, social media, technology, geography, all you mentioned, Alan, but also the specificity in which they have of a mission. It's not to reform gun laws. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's part of it, certainly. But they, as they stated, Melissa, at the rally in Fort Lauderdale on Saturday, it was that there are no more school mass shootings. Very declarative, very simple to measure, frankly, going forward, Alan. And I think that kind of declarative statement, again, after these tragedies, we haven't necessarily seen. And as we played, the student leaders haven't talked about banning all firearms. They've talked about an incremental approach. They've talked about proposals that have been out there in the past, but in a way that is more measured than we've seen after these kinds of tragedies in some instances.
It's more measured, but that also means that it allows for their voice to be broken up. You know, it's because it's, again, one thing, it's okay, let's stop this. Never again. This isn't going to happen. Well, does that mean arming teachers? Does that mean banning assault rifles? Sure. Does that mean raising the minimum age to purchase an AR-15? Does that mean, you know, any of the, you know, what we saw just a couple of hours ago when Governor Rick Scott and leaders of the legislature were laying out their plans and what they're going to push for in these next couple of weeks in Tallahassee is a very broad and very different group of policies that sort of, in a way, allows them to sort of take it piece by piece, and that, in a way, kind of starts diluting the message a little bit.
We heard that a little bit from Senator Rubio in his somewhat interrupted and kind of tortured explanation about the ban on assault weapons.
Right. And how about the fact that on that town hall the other night, Alan, one of the key moments in that program, I thought, had to do with the moment when one of the students, Cameron Caskey, asked Senator Rubio if he would take a pledge never to take money from the National Rifle Association again. And Senator Rubio wouldn't make that commitment. And so now what we're starting to see spring up online is the hashtag NRA boycott, where people are trying to pressure businesses that have ancillary partnerships with the NRA to dump those partnerships. And some companies are doing that.
Yeah, and what we saw from Senator Rubio in his response was he didn't answer that question specifically. He didn't vow to stop receiving contributions from the NRA. What he went into was a sort of kind of a bit of a stump speech on sort of, this is what my policy is, this is what my proposal is, this
supporters
is what I think.
Support the agenda. I don't support the agenda of supporters.
Exactly. So, yeah. So it allows, you know, anybody from Washington and Tallahassee to say, well, yes, I want to harden schools. I want to, you know, bring in more metal detectors. I want to bring in a law enforcement officer. But does that get to the core message of these students that they don't want AR-15s, you know, all over right. the place? It breaks apart the argument. So that we're arguing all these different things and sort of losing focus from what these kids are pushing
for.
But
what came out quickly, Melissa, and you heard this and we heard it, Alan, and you covered it, is the student leaders directing a lot of the criticism to the funders, to the money. They follow the money. They
right.
follow the money to the NRA. Right. And over the course of the week, that has kind of manifested itself.
And you're seeing a pretty quick, yeah, a very rapid manifestation. Exactly right. Let's go to D.C. in Miami. He's on the line. D.C., you're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I wrote a comment to Tom for his WLRN article, Anguish and Activism. And the point I want to bring up is something I've been studying for decades.
Real quick, please.
That this whole argument is based on the core problem, which is the Second Amendment itself. It is only one sentence, and I never hear any discussion where you first recite the amendment. And it is so widely...
And we're still arguing about it today. We're still arguing about it today. We're going to keep discussing that, but right now we want to thank Alan Gomez of USA Today, and thank you for that call. And in a moment, further discussion of the debate over gun reform in America here on the Florida Roundup, our statewide edition. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup statewide edition. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. Governor Rick Scott announcing, Melissa, in the last couple of hours, a three-part action plan in response to the Douglas High School shooting. Covers gun laws, school safety, and mental health. Some of the points here: requiring individuals purchasing firearms to be 21 years or older, except for some exceptions. Legislators in Florida also announcing some plans, including supporting this age of 21 for purchase of rifles and firearms, correcting just something we mentioned on a local show here in Miami about an hour or so ago. Mm-hmm. But that seems to have some support here, Melissa, as well as enhanced criminal penalties for threats against school, as well as new investments throughout the state in the mental health industry.
That's right, Tom. And the stakes are high for the governor here in Florida. It's a big election year, with two significant statewide races for governor and also U.S. Senate. Now, a couple of ads released this week call out both the state legislature and the governor for not taking action on guns and school safety. Former Miami Beach Mayor Philip Levine is a Democratic candidate for governor.
And the tragedy at Stoneman Douglas High is a wake-up call we can't ignore. We need reasonable gun regulation, better background checks, and a permanent ban on assault rifles.
So that's Levine's ad, but the ads are being cut from even out of state about this. Former Arizona Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, as you might recall, was shot in the head during an assassination attempt 7 years ago. That gunman killed people, wounded 19 more. Giffords survived. She now has a nonprofit promoting gun control, and that nonprofit has taken out an ad campaign against Governor Scott.
But Governor Rick Scott made it illegal for a doctor to ask a patient if they owned a gun, even a mental health professional. This law was so dangerous that a court had to strike it down. Governor Scott, we need more than your thoughts and prayers.
The messaging, the advertising already underway. The National Rifle Association is quite the heavyweight here, spending money for and against Florida's congressional delegates. Most of the NRA money is funneled to political campaigns through two political action committees from the NRA. These PACs give much more money to campaigns and candidates than the NRA itself. Now, for example here, the National Rifle Association gave nearly $10,000 to Marco Rubio for the 2016 Senate campaign, but the two political action committees from the association gave close to $1 million to Rubio's 2010 and 2016 Senate campaigns, as well as his presidential bid. NRA money in Florida during this gun debate here in the week after the Stoneman Douglas High School massacre. Joining us now from our sister station in Tampa, WUSF, is Trevor Aronson. He's with the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting. Your questions, your concerns, your calls about NRA money. Do you support it? Do you not? 305-995-1800. Trevor, how much money are we talking about the NRA investing either directly or indirectly through its political action committees in Florida's national politicians?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking millions of dollars. And, you know, a good example of this is Rubio's campaign, right? As you mentioned, he had received nearly $1 million in contributions from the NRA's PACs for his Senate races and in his presidential bid. But the NRA, through these PACs, particularly a PAC known as the NRA Institute for Legislative Action, also spends money against candidates. And that's where you see a lot of the bigger dollars. So for in Rubio's case, he received $1 million in contributions to his campaign, as well as independent expenditures such as ads that the NRA ran for Rubio. But on the other side, his opponent in the last election, Democrat Patrick Murphy, the NRA spent nearly $2 million in ads against Murphy. So just in the last Senate race, as an example, you're looking at almost $3 million that the NRA spent backing one particular candidate, in this case, Rubio.
It's such big money, and particularly in Republican primaries, it's money that can be decisive, Trevor. For example, say you're a Republican and you decide you don't want to take money from this group. Your opponent will, and it can be significant, and it can make the difference in primary elections often. Also wanted to ask you, it was striking to see, as we saw the students from South Florida bus up to Tallahassee and then see the anguish on their faces when the Florida House voted down a motion to discuss an assault weapons ban. Just the partisan divide of that vote, it was quite predictable. As you saw, Democrats vote in favor of that and Republicans uniformly vote against that. And so those that are in favor of limiting these limiting these weapons, see that the Republican politicians are bought, in their words, by the National Rifle Association. Of course, Senator Rubio, the other night on the town hall, he disputed that. He said the NRA has bought into his agenda. But this has become something that it just further is evidence of how divided we are as a country, because if you're a Republican, you want an A-plus rating from the NRA. If you're a Democrat, you want an F from the NRA. And you want to be able to say you have not taken money from the NRA if you're a Democrat.
Right, absolutely. There's definitely this partisan divide where the vast majority of money goes to Republicans from the NRA. The other thing I think is important to recognize, too, is that there's really two ways that the NRA gives money. Like, one way is the carrot, right? Like, they go to a politician and they say, okay, we're going to give your campaign money if in turn you support our agenda, so to speak. And that's, you know, the question that the student Cameron Caskey asked Rubio was essentially like, will you stop taking the carrot? Will you stop accepting money from the NRA? But even if Rubio were to say, yes, I'll stop taking money from the NRA, that doesn't mean he's free from the corrupting influence of the NRA's dollars, so to speak, because what ends up happening is that the NRA, through its PACs, can spend millions of dollars in opposition to candidates. So let's say Rubio decides to run for Senate again in 5 years, and he has an insurgent Republican candidate coming up challenging him in the primary. The NRA may choose to back that candidate and run millions of dollars in negative ads against Rubio. And so politicians like Rubio, as well as Republicans in the State House and the State Senate, realize that even if they don't take NRA dollars, that they face opposition in their campaigns from the NRA if their voting record is not something that the NRA finds favorable.
Trevor, is the NRA operating any differently than any other special interest group when it comes to its dollars and its strategies here in Florida?
No. I mean, that's what's important to realize, too. Like, this is perfectly legal, right? Like, in a sense, and this is a very cynical way of saying it, that through these campaign finance laws, we have essentially kind of codified and legalized a form of bribery, right? We allow massive amounts of money into the political system by special interest groups. And indeed, like, the NRA in many ways has pioneered pioneered lobbying and negative ads in a way that other political action groups and special interest groups have followed. And certainly the NRA has done an enormous job at raising money from its members as well as getting contributions from gun manufacturers. And so it is among the wealthiest and most aggressive of the special interest groups with PACs. But, you know, it's certainly not alone in that way. I mean, particularly post-Citizens United, where, you know, we've seen a lot of the limitations on money into campaigns and special interest group PACs being lifted.
It's 305-995-1800. What are your thoughts about the National Rifle Association as we continue our discussion of gun reform in America and the Never Again movement? Now, you mentioned the gun manufacturers, Trevor Aronson. What's your reaction to the charge that's been made as all of this has flared up again in this country in recent days that the NRA doesn't really lobby for gun owners but for gun manufacturers?
Yeah, so publicly what the NRA states is that we have these millions of members and they pay dues and all of that is true. But the difference is that the addition is that the NRA also has these gun manufacturers who want to see lax gun control laws because simply it's in their business interest. I mean, they make money by selling guns. So if guns are more readily available and easier to sell, then they in turn will make more money. And of course, that in turn translates into contributions to the NRA from the gun manufacturers. You know, I mean, just to give you an example, if you look at like how the First Amendment is defended and how the Second Amendment is defended, you know, on the First Amendment side, you have the ACLU. The ACLU is largely, funded by its members. There isn't a big special interest group of a manufacturing base that is providing the ACLU with money. By contrast, the NRA has the members in the way that the ACLU has, but it then also has these gun manufacturers who are contributing to it. And, you know, just has like one data point to show you kind of the differences and how these things are funded. You know, the CEO of the ACLU makes $400,000 per year. Wayne LaPierre, the CEO at the NRA, you know, makes $5 million per year. And so the NRA's ability to infuse money into campaigns and influence the debate is, you know, significantly more than the ACLU, its counterpart in defending the First Amendment.
We're speaking with Trevor Aronson with the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting here on the Florida Roundup Statewide Edition, talking about the NRA and its use of lobbying money as it relates to Florida politicians here a week after the Stoneman Douglas High School massacre, the worst mass shooting at a high school in the United States. 305-995-1800 is the phone number to join the conversation. That's the number that Mary in Boynton called. Mary, you are on the radio. Thanks for holding on. Your thoughts?
Well, I just feel that the influence of the NRA is the reason we cannot do something about assault weapons. And it's going to continue just the way it is because there's so much money that they pour into our political system. And to be able to change that, the NRA is going to have to make a stand. And these individual politicians, they have no morality. Honestly, they're interested in getting a vote. They're interested in staying in power. And I admire all of these young young adults with big minds, and they were actually criticized earlier in your program about being young, and, you know, they are making a stand. They're going to make a difference, but to make a major difference, the NRA should stand up and make a change here.
Mary,
we got it.
Thank you. No, appreciate that thought. I want to put that a little bit to Trevor here with a couple of different proposals that are making the rounds. One that President Trump has endorsed regarding arming teachers, rather allowing teachers to carry guns in the classroom. I believe, Trevor, that's something that the NRA has endorsed. And then the statewide response regarding age limits on purchasing of all firearms, raising it in the state of Florida to 21, something that the Florida Governor Rick Scott has announced his support for in the last several hours, as well as some legislative leaders, something, Trevor, that the NRA does not support, raising that age limit.
Yeah, so on the first proposal, this idea of giving guns to teachers, I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that we can look at and maybe seeing how flawed this is, you know, there was the school resource officer in Broward at Stoneman Douglas who, you know, apparently waited 4 minutes as the shooting was going on to go in and potentially engage the shooter. And there have been studies that about people who are in situations like that where they are armed, and the very common thing to happen is to freeze unless you have, you know, an enormous amount of training in conflict areas like that. And so I think the idea that we would arm teachers and then they would be able to respond like some sort of military force is really not kind of considering.
Yeah, I guess what I'm asking is beyond the merits of the actual proposal, the NRA influence in this. This is something the NRA supports, one could argue, because it increases the market for guns and gun manufacturers that are involved with the NRA. But on the other hand, the governor, who had an A-plus rating for the NRA, has just come out to support raising the age limit for the purchases.
That's my point, is that here we are in an election year, and you see this spectacle of Republicans debating serious gun reform legislation in a state that's known for quite lax gun legislation. It's an extraordinary thing to be watching.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, you know, well, on the first one, I mean, obviously, if we bring schools into or guns into schools, I mean, in this kind of terrible irony, that will actually benefit the NRA and gun manufacturers, right? Because you're essentially creating this new market for the purchase of new weapons. And, you know, kind of if that ends up being the solution out of this tragedy, I think that's a fairly unfortunate.
And you're listening to the Florida Roundup, our statewide edition from Florida Public Radio. Hold that thought, Trevor, as we go quickly to Eliza in Palmetto Bay. Eliza, you're on the radio.
Hi, yes. I wanted to bring up a fact that I learned this morning that shocked me, and that is that the NRA is a non-for-profit tax-exempt organization. And I just wonder how that can be and how they can be throwing so much money around if they are supposedly non-profit.
So the nonprofit status of the National Rifle Association, Trevor, you want to tackle that? I mean, it's a group not unlike other nonprofits where folks donate or give it money, and then it kind of, you know, spends the money on their behalf on the ideology or the advocacy that folks are supporting via their financial investment.
It's actually I'm looking here quickly. It's an umbrella organization, so the money is diverted through channels. But Trevor, go ahead.
Yeah, so there's a number of different types of nonprofits. You know, the most common that for example, we are at the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting is a 501c3. Under IRS laws, 501c3s aren't allowed to endorse candidates or lobby or push for any specific legislation. You know, so like your local YMCA, your animal shelter, those would all most likely be 501c3s. There are other types of nonprofits that allow organizations to engage in the political process to a larger degree, and depending on the type of nonprofit, the amount of the deductible tax dollar, the amount of the deductible that you can take. So in some of these cases with 501c3s, if you donate a dollar, about 80 cents of that is deductible on your taxes. With organizations like the NRA, it's a sliding scale depending on how politically active they are under their designation. But, I mean, the caller raises an important question in the sense that, you know, we are allowing kind of tax-deductible dollars to be funneled through an organization that is ultimately then, you know, funding candidates and funding specific agenda items.
Let me squeeze in one more call here from Charlotte County. Walter, thanks for holding on. You're on the radio. Go ahead.
Yes, I understand with the funding for NRA funding politicians and so forth. But my question is, there, as tragic as the incident was in Broward County, why hasn't the media worked in on the fact that the FBI had tips on the sure. shooter,
yep.
and Broward County had incidents yep. with this, and no one's talked about it.
Yeah.
All they are is on the bandwagon about guns and guns.
Sure, control. Walter, you know, I don't know what you're listening to there in Charlotte County. I can tell you here in South Florida, we've done a lot of coverage. In fact, we just talked about an hour of that, the missed signals that not only the FBI missed, BSO, which is Broward Sheriff's Office here in South Florida, as well as the Department of Children and Families, which is the state agency, as well as the Broward County Public Schools that were involved in this and had encounters with this. So we are certainly talking about it on the local level. On the national level, Walter, probably you're absolutely right. The kind of weeds of the missing signals from all these local agencies is not nearly perhaps as interesting as the story of guns.
And how sickening to hear that there was an armed sheriff's deputy outside who didn't go in to stop the massacre of the students. That's just been one more element to this that's been so tragic to hear about. And so
quick final seconds here, Trevor. I want you to circle back around with this. Governor Scott, though, putting a proposal together against an NRA effort to raise the purchase age up to 21 for all firearms in the state of Florida. We've got just a couple of seconds here.
Yeah, so this strikes me, I mean, obviously Rick Scott is seems to be eyeing a run for Senate. I mean, this strikes me as when you see NRA-backed politicians, particularly on the Republican side, coming up with proposals, they seem to kind of take it an inch and the NRA objects, but they never really take it very far. So, for example, raising the gun age to 21 is a significant change, but it isn't as significant as saying, you know, working on some sort of assault rifle ban or limiting the amount of ammunition or the type of guns that people over 21 can get, which I'm sure the NRA would object to even more vociferously than from Scott's proposal.
Trevor Aronson with the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting with us from Tampa. Trevor, thanks for joining us on the program today. Much appreciated.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
You are listening to the Florida Roundup Statewide Edition from Florida Public Radio. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. You are listening to the statewide edition here. Thanks for doing that. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, as we continue our hour-long discussion of the Never Again movement, the gun issue, Tom, is reshaping high-profile political races here in Florida up and down the ballot.
Yeah, it's doing it very, very fast after this tragedy in Parkland, Florida. One of those races, the Florida governor's race. Two Democratic candidates, the Tallahassee mayor and the Orlando businessman, Chris King. The two of them participated in a Wednesday gun control rally. And at the same time, the Republican ag commissioner and former Congressman Adam Putnam has described himself before the shooting as a, quote, proud NRA sellout. Now, the Republican Governor Rick Scott, a gun rights supporter, is expected to challenge Democratic Senator Bill Nelson in the November campaign. Scott has NRA support, and he has signed numerous gun rights bills throughout his tenure as governor here in Florida. Nelson is urging a ban on assault rifles and a buyback program from private owners. Now, today, while announcing some new proposals on gun, school safety, and mental health issues for the state of Florida, the governor went right after the sitting Democratic senator.
So Bill Nelson is a career politician. He talks a lot, and he does nothing. Think about it. He's been in office for almost 50 years. Ever done anything on gun safety or school safety? Done nothing on gun control. If he wanted to get something done, what he ought to do, he ought to be sitting down and working on a plan to get something done.
Now, he is not, Governor Scott is not a declared candidate for senator, but boy, it certainly sounds like there's a race here already underway, Melissa.
It sure does.
Senator Nelson, in fact, did issue an email response about an hour or so ago saying it's clear the governor is once again choosing to listen only to the NRA. Senator Nelson continued saying, quote, the governor's plan doesn't do one thing to ensure comprehensive criminal background checks or ban assault rifles like the AR-15. His leadership is weak. And Senator Nelson saying it's weak by recommending raising the age of 21. He's doing the bare minimum in the estimation of Senator Nelson.
So the gun issue affecting what looks to be a Scott-Nelson matchup. And it's also heating up another interesting race in Florida. We're going to focus on just one contest right now, although there are several around the state where this is a factor. But right now we're going to talk about the race between Congressman Al Lawson and former Jacksonville Mayor Alvin Brown. Brown's campaign issued a press release Monday accusing North Florida Congressman Al Lawson of taking $2,500 from an NRA PAC. Lawson denies that. But OpenSecrets.org and the Federal Elections Commission website show the donation did happen last summer. Lawson's previous positions on gun policy, well, they really weren't an issue before, but in this shifting landscape, as a Democrat, they may be trouble for him in the 2018 election. Sergio Bustos is senior editor of Politico Florida, and he joins us now. Sergio, up and down the ballot, politicians are recalibrating their position on this, both Republican and Democrat. What about this race between Al Lawson and Alvin Brown? Former Mayor Brown is really jumping all over this issue in his quest to take out Al or to unseat Al Lawson.
Yeah, you know, this is going to be an interesting kind of several months ahead because you've got an issue that, you know, with gun control that has just riveted not only the state, but the whole nation. And, you know, for the first time, there seems to be movement on the part of Republicans who have long kind of, you know, historically opposed any gun control reform. And it's going to ricochet in a race like that one. However, I still think Representative Lawson is in a much stronger position as a Democrat in that seat. So even a primary challenge may be difficult.
And why do you say that?
Well, because I think in terms of his position, Representative Lawson has, you know, he's going to have the backing of kind of the party itself in terms of the fact that he's already gotten into power. Plus, he's running on, I think, what's going to be a strong issue, a good wave for all Democrats nationwide. So I just think it's going to be a hard uphill climb for the former.
So this issue is one that you think will have some impact on a lot of races, but it's not the issue, or at least it may not be by November or even by the primary.
You know, I never want to say what's going to be the key issue because if you would have said it a couple of weeks ago, you would not have even have mentioned
that's right, yeah.
The word guns.
Well, I think that shows kind of how far and how loud this debate and how fast this debate has happened, in part because of that Never Again movement, in part because the students of Stoneman Douglas speaking out in ways that we haven't seen victims of mass shootings do in tragedies past. I want to bring in Steve in Fort Lauderdale talking about the influence of NRA in politics here in Florida. Steve, thanks for holding on. You're on the radio. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you doing? Yeah, one of the things I wanted to state is the reason the NRA is so powerful and has so much money is because they do represent a lot of Americans. Even though I don't agree with their policies, I do respect that and think that people should. I also have a couple comments about some of the other stuff, because I am a retired law enforcement officer and veteran.
Steve, let's just hold on a second here. I'm going to kind of get Sergio to give us some thoughts on the influence of the National Rifle Association. We were just talking about Trevor Aronson with the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting about the money that it spreads around the state of Florida. How much are voters going to follow that money, do you think, in the races ahead here toward the primary and then toward the general election here this year?
Well, it's no secret that the NRA has been a powerful force in Florida as well as across the country. How their influence, I think it's going to again come down to the ballot box come November. I will say this. The revelations, not only yesterday from the Barrera Sheriff's Office, and maybe the law enforcement officer can speak to this, but the revelations by the BSO yesterday that the deputy on duty at the school, an armed individual, did not take any action, coupled with the information that came out that the FBI did not follow up on the January 5th tip about the shooter, coupled with the YouTube video that came out months ago, I think it lends itself to, and I don't want to say cover for those that back the NRA, but it certainly is a strong argument to make that it wasn't just the guns in this case, but it's also the failure of our institutions to really enforce the law and you know, be on the alert for when things like this happen.
All right. And it's the Florida Roundup Statewide Edition from Florida Public Radio. Steve in Fort Lauderdale, do you want to react to that? What about what we've learned about the deputy that was outside the high school? He was armed, but he didn't go in. And do you see this as partially a failure of our institutions, as Sergio said?
Well, yes, it definitely is a failure, but unfortunately, like a lot of other law enforcement officers will come on there and tell you, you can't blame law enforcement as a whole. It's very hard to know what you'll do in a situation like that until you come across it. I've been involved in, you know, two fatalities while working, and both times it was very traumatic. And you won't know until you get that situation. One involved a shoot that we should have done, and one involved a shoot we shouldn't have done. And it's a very difficult situation to answer, you know, whether somebody will do it. That's why I'm against teachers having guns, because I don't think, even with the amount of training the officers get, they don't make right decisions frequently. I don't see how teachers could with the much less training.
Right. The trauma of the situation, you're saying, even for a trained officer, can be overwhelming.
And when you hear a lot of gunfire, you tend to not want to stick your head up until you feel you can safely, which is the reason why they want to get the rifles for the officers, because at least then you can have some range to make it safer for you. But on the other hand, that's why it's bad that everybody should be villainizing the rifle. That's a deficit for a guy who's inside a small building just trying to move it around a lot.
I was just going to add that I'm going off what Broward Sheriff Scott Israel said yesterday when asked what should the deputy have done, and he said he should have
killed the killer.
You know, I think that's and there is going to be a long investigation, both at the federal level by Congress, the FBI, and also BSO into what happened before and during and after before and during the shooting.
Sergio, let me ask you, you're a longtime journalist in Florida politics, a watcher. Have you seen guns exert itself and the gun issue exert itself as a political issue that could drive ballot results like it could this cycle?
No, absolutely not. I thought in the 2012? I'm sorry. I'm thinking about the Sandy Hook shooting in 2012.
2012, right.
But the
right.
Pulse shooting in 2016,
right.
You know, that even came much closer to the election. And it still didn't really move the needle as much. Very little got done. And then, as you've noted, the shootings in Las Vegas have prompted talks about a device used on guns to make them more more stronger, that being the bump stocks. But no, this is just, to me, unprecedented, the amount of attention and the movement on the part of a Republican-dominated legislature in Florida that has just been really on the side of the NRA and gun rights owners.
It is something new to see, and we'll have to follow not only these individual races that we've been talking about, but just where this goes in Florida and around the country. But in the meantime, Sergio, thanks for lending your insights and your expertise to this show. We really appreciate you being here today.
Thank you for the invitation.
That's Sergio Bustos. He's the senior editor of Politico Florida as we wrap up a full hour on the Never Again movement. And there's been so much that's happened this week, Tom. Yeah. There's been a lot to talk about.
Yeah, it has. It's been a remarkable, a tragic week, another week of certainly anguish for South Florida as well as the state, and a week of activism, a week of remarkable display of civic involvement and civic engagement, and not only with the students in Tallahassee, but also the conversation with three elected officials there in Sunrise, Florida, with the CNN town hall. It has been a week of conversation and a week of activity and significant movement, one that we will continue following on your Florida Public Radio station.
And that is our show for today. The Florida Roundup, produced by WJCT Public Broadcasting in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Gina Jordan and Kevin Merschart are producers.
Jason Zabka, our technical director, with help from WLRN's program director, Peter Meritz. Our theme music provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Friday. Okay.